This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark Carmel, thank you so much for the coffee.
Well, having had it so clearly flagged up, I felt that it would have been inappropriate. Can we get straight into the subject of Tyson before we do anything else, before we do the box office top 10?
100%, let's do that.
We've just heard the Toback interview, and I think it's important to kind of pick it up straight away. So, you were saying in there that in terms of it being a film that prioritises boxing, that it, you know, that it's important and that it does takes the subject seriously. So I want to differentiate right at the beginning of this between it being a film about boxing and it being a film about Tyson Ferguson, because obviously what I know about sport, and this will relate also to Damned United, wouldn't fill the back of a postage stamp. Okay? I don't know about nor claim to understand boxing, and I think that if you, who know about boxing, think that it's a significant film about boxing, then I think that is to be taken seriously. So do you think that it's an important film about boxing, the sport, rather than Tyson the person?
Yeah, I think it gets across clearly that he will never be regarded as the greatest fighter in the world or even in the top five, but it was something that I think John Rawlings said to me, a big boxing commentator in Britain, and it's always resonated with me. He said there's a difference between someone who on their night is the greatest fighter in the world and someone who is one of the greatest fighters has ever been. On his night, Mike Tyson was unstoppable. He did things at amateur level, which the film flags up beautifully. Knocking people out with gloves that are too heavy to knock people out with. That's why they're that weight. That's why they're that size. It's not about knocking people out. He was doing it in 8 seconds. While on form, and while he wasn't caught up in his own hubris and not training when he was world champion, if he trained for a fight, he was going to win that fight. And it's so sad, it chronicles so well how he turns into a journeyman. The saddest point of Mike Tyson's career. So in a boxing front, does the job beautifully.
Okay, so I accept all of that. I think the problem with the film is that what it doesn't do is aggressively enough deal with the subject of Mike Tyson and his relationship with women. In fact, it absolutely runs away from the subject in a way that I think is rather disgraceful. He is allowed, I mean, obviously, you know, he was convicted in terms of the rape conviction. He is allowed to refer, as James Toback said in that interview, to his victim as a wretched swine. And yet we hear from his own mouth his description of his relationships with women that are literally the sort of thing that you would show to a jury and go, I'm sorry, the prosecution rests. There is one point, now correct me if I'm wrong, because I saw this in Cannes. It was a strange thing. I think it was the first film I saw when I got to Cannes in May of last year. And I mean, I have reservations about James Toback anyway. I think he's a very manly kind of man. I don't trust his sexual politics at all. And I think that there are moments in the film when Tyson says things like he's talking about, you know, an animal watching its prey after it's been wounded. And he seems to think that there is nothing wrong with describing a gaze in those ways. Sorry, you're looking concerned at me.
I just came away from the film feeling like it did show Mike Tyson up as a sexual predator and did show up his shortcomings, and there was a telling line from Mike Tyson when he claims to this day he didn't rape Desiree Washington. It happens that the director, James Toback, agrees with him, and I agree absolutely. That makes it one-sided beyond belief in the coverage of that. He did take the decision not to interview anyone else. Don King, Desiree Washington, everyone else would be queuing up round the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that. I think it's a brave documentary just to have Mike Tyson. I think it does show up. And he is accountable for it. And he says, I'm accountable for everything that's happened to me. It's my fault.
What you don't get is you don't get him pushed on the subject of what actually happened there. What you get is him able, I mean, he is from his own mouth condemned. I mean, he says things about his relationship to women that just make you think, I'm sorry, I'm not entirely sure on what planet saying those views out loud is considered to be in any way, except, I mean, here's the only way I'd reverse it. If somebody made comments about racial comments in the way that he makes comments that I consider to be misogynistic, they would literally be hounded out of town. And it's funny that, in a way, I think what the... I mean, I agree. I mean, I came away from documentary thinking, absolutely, absolutely, on every front, is he guilty as sin in terms of that, you know, that part of his life.
Yes.
And I just can't imagine a situation in which somebody who espoused views that were that racist in his way, the same way that he is, I think, rampantly misogynist. Mm. People just wouldn't say, well, I'm sorry, I can't get beyond that. And my problem, therefore, is I simply can't get beyond that. I just cannot get beyond the lack of sympathy with, I'm sorry, your views on women are so abhorrent, are so appalling, are so stuck in a mindset that I just can't even begin to engage with, that beyond that, I'm not interested in what you have to say. And when he starts discussing his tattoos, and when he starts discussing the other parts of life, you think, yeah, but, you know, this from the mind of a man who looks at one half of the population, 51% of the population, as it turns out, in a way which is just reprehensible beyond belief. And I actually, and I'm quite happy to admit this, that provided a stumbling block for me beyond which I could not get, which is why I began this by saying, do you, from a sporting point of view, is it a better documentary than that? Because what I really want to see is somebody saying, okay, hang on, you have to stop now and we have to talk this through. You have to justify this kind of thing. And I can't imagine a documentary in which if somebody espoused views that were that racist, that wouldn't happen.
I agree with you 100%. The only thing, I think what you said is really pertinent, he's condemned by his own mind.
He is, yes.
I didn't come away from the documentary feeling any sympathy for Mike Tyson, sure. But I felt like Toback had opened up his mind and showed me the demons dancing around inside.
Okay,
I thought he did that brilliant.
Well, I think in the end we come away with the same feeling about the man himself. I suppose my problem is that what I want to see, therefore, is I want to see some interrogation about that. I want to see if you're allowing your subject to use phrases like, you know, wretched and terrible what I want to see is interrogation. I don't want him to just be allowed to say and get away, because actually part of me was sitting there in the screening going, hang on, I don't care about anything else, you have to stop now and address this particular issue. I mean, I do completely accept that it's a stumbling block beyond which I could not get. The other thing is, I think actually, in terms of the subject relationship with the director, I think Toback is slightly infatuated with him.
Yeah.
And it's funny that he mentions Black and White, because obviously there's that very strange scene in Black and White in which Robert Downey Jr. comes onto Tyson and almost gets himself, you know, quite, you know, realistically messed up in a very real and, you know, legally binding way. What I thought was that actually Toback finds him more sympathetic than I wanted the director to find him. Again, I accept that that's a personal issue, but I mean, it is a personal political thing for me. I just can't get interested in or worked up about somebody whose views on women are, and I think you'd agree with me, are just loathsome.
And it's so important when you watch this movie, if you go and see this documentary, it's definitely a must for boxing fans. And watch when Tyson can't speak because of tears. It's not when he cheated on his wife. It's not Desiree Washington. It's when he talks about Castamato, his muse, the man who took him through, and about when he talks about becoming a heavyweight champion in the world. That's when he chokes on his words.
Sure, sure.
Which is a remarkable insight to the working of his mind. Well, we've done that slightly irregularly. We're
I think it's important because after you talk to Toback about it, and it's interesting because Toback is... He talks a really good film.
Yeah.
I mean, you could sit there and talk to him for an hour.
I was romanced by him, I have to
admit. You were slightly... But that's great, you know. Hey, there's a marvellous moment when one is kind of seduced by the presence of a filmmaker whose work one has admired. Frankly, I don't share your admiration, but I think off the back of that conversation, we had to do the review straight away.
Yeah. Now, I don't know whether I would call it a promise, Mark, but last time I was in for Simon... I hounded you that much, you just went, okay. That to me is a promise.
What did I do?
You don't watch television.
No, I have watched some television.
A little bit.
Go on, what?
You promised me if I brought this in, you'd do four episodes.
Oh, yes, Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You know, that's series one, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and then I'm here Friday week,
okay.
And we'll find out what
How
you
many
think.
Episodes do I have to watch?
I think four, because at 27 minutes each, that's about a film
that's
length,
That's 2 hours.
Right?
Okay, fine. You know, the funny thing is that since you said that, a couple of friends of mine have said, Have you clicked with Curb Your Enthusiasm yet? Because you absolutely have to. So you're not alone in this. So I promise you I will do it now, okay?
I'm confident. Right, this week's movies.
I still don't get boxing.
That are right. The Damn United. Let's see if he gets football in a little bit.
Do you want to do the top 10?
Going to do the top 10 first, yeah. We're going to do Bronson.
Well, I liked it. I mean, I don't think it's irresponsible at all. I think it's stylish and interesting. And crucially, it's not about a real-life criminal. It's a film about people playing roles. I think that's what it's about.
Kit says, saw Bronson. Hello, Charles and Eddie. Saw Bronson on Wednesday night and thought it was absolutely mesmerising. Tom Hardy's performance was stunning. So
it
varied.
Is.
It's one downfall. It seemed to be James Lance's very sketchy Scouse accent as the art teacher who becomes one of Bronson's works. Was he a bit like, hey?
Well, it didn't bother me, but I like the phrase, a sketchy Scouse accent.
Okay, lovely. Number 9 in the UK box office top 10, Bolt.
If you went to go and see it, you should have seen it in 3D because it was designed to be seen in 3D. I know there's a 2D print going around, but it is a 3D film. It's unremarkable if it's not in 3D. And in 3D, it's interesting because we're told that 3D is the future and it is attempting to be immersive 3D rather than just protruding 3D.
You know this big technology display thing? They have the big exhibition in Tokyo, which just happened.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the watches that you click a button and it projects a 32 or 38-inch television onto a wall.
No, that's Joe 90.
Oh,
that's
right.
Not real.
Oh, I must have got my channels mixed up and watched the wrong thing.
Serious?
That's happening. That's happening. There's also a car that drives itself, so expect both of those.
No, that
about
is definitely
2040.
That's Captain Scarlet. Okay, you've been watching the Gerry Anderson channel and mistaking it for the news channel. They're probably one, you know, next door to each other.
Happens in my simple mind. Okay. Two monkeys playing table tennis at 8. The Young Victoria.
On the subject, I like the Young Victoria. And if you have you have a daughter who's of an interested age in history, go and see it, because actually it's a film in which there is a strong female lead who actually triumphs through being smarter than those around her. Yes, it fancies up history a little bit, but it's a good engrossing tale with some nice costume stuff to look at, and actually good to see in a top 10, particularly after we've just talked about Tyson, a film in which strong female lead who's smarter than all those blokes around her. I liked it.
At number 7, the not often talked about Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, never heard of it. Now, I mean, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Is there anyone in the world now officially hasn't? Because Danny Boy was on the radio the other day, because it's just opened in China.
Yeah.
So it's been given permission to play in China, which is actually quite a big deal. I think that we are now getting to the tipping point that the number of people in the world who haven't seen Slumdog Millionaire is actually less than those who have. And the only thing to say about that is it's amazing. If you go back 6 months ago and say, here's this weird little art house movie that's a Danny Boyle movie, but how broad can its appeal be? I don't think anybody would have predicted. I mean, I loved it, but I would not have predicted that it would have been the success that it has been.
The book blew me away. It was one of those airport buys when I was going on holiday, and it was a debut novel, and I just couldn't say anything I liked, and I picked it up.
Is this before the film?
Long before. It was
when
the debut novel
came out.
You're
way ahead of me.
It's called Q&A.
Q&A.
Which is horrible to try and Google. Try and Google Q&A and see if you can find the book. But anyway, I thought the film ripped the heart out of the book.
Did you?
I thought it missed the whole point of it and changed the most important part, which was the ending. And there's nothing worse for me than an average film. I'd rather say a terrible film. But Dear Slumdog, just to point out about Slumdog, which I'm surprised has not been raised in the past, the cinematography, Dear Slumdog, throughout was taken straight from City of God, and there's no two ways about it.
I would absolutely disagree with that. I think Anthony Dobmantle was... I mean, funnily enough, I know that there is a stylistic comparison with City of God, but in fact... Anthony Dobmantle's work predates that, and he was, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who are experimenting with doing handheld, low-level, moving, very sort of frenetic cinematography, and I know it looks like City of God, and I'm sure you can make stylistic comparisons, but it's not ripped off of it. Anthony Dobmantle has been doing that stuff for quite some time.
Then consider yourself corrected. I love this. For Mayo and Kermode, and it says, in the subject says, guess this doesn't work, in the witty double stuff. So I don't write to the BBC much, in fact, at all. I do, however, listen to Kermode, respect his opinion generally, and think Mayo is a well-informed foil. However, Slumdog Millionaire, I went to see it last week in the US. Yes, I get it. It's okay. It's okay, and it's okay. It's like Gregory's Girl or Some Kind of Wonderful in the whatever tease, but that is all.
What, Gregory's Girl is just... not very. Is he saying Gregory's Girl is just
okay? They're all right.
Well, by your own, was it hoist by your own petard? Incidentally, do you know what hoist by your own petard actually means?
No.
It means blown up by your own bomb. Sounds like it should mean hung from your own gallows, but it means blown up by your own bomb. Carry on.
Slumdog Millionaire, what the bleep is going on? Hi, please read out this email. I need to know if there are others out there or if I'm the only sane person in a mad world. Here goes. Slumdog Millionaire is very, very, very average.
You've just picked
in
out
Dublin.
All the negative ones. This is,
I didn't even look. I don't get to see the emails. I'm only the sub teacher.
They've pruned them for you is what they've done. They've gone,
maybe.
Colin's coming, he doesn't like Slumdog. Just the ones that don't like it to make you feel happy. It's fine. I understand. A variety of opinions are allowed. The fact is, you're all wrong. It's great.
You know what? I'm completely coloured by the fact that I'd read the book. And if I'd read the book, I wouldn't have viewed the film in the
just
same
way. Just goes
to
show, reading is not good for you.
No, it's not.
Why read books? Have you ever seen that film, Matilda? There's that brilliant bit in it where Danny DeVito goes, why do we need books? We've got television. Well, why do we need books? I've got films.
I personally cheer when literacy levels drop. Number 6, Gran Torino.
Which I like very much. Clint Eastwood making all this stuff look effortless. It's up there with Unforgiven, and it's you've seen it, right?
No, and that's fantastic that you say that, because I love Eastwood and I need to see it.
Yeah, you do. It's great. Changeling, incidentally, is out on DVD on Monday, and I really like Changeling as well. I think so. Two great movies from Eastwood within the last year.
Eastwood's got to be quite high up the hero list, and most people's hero list for both sides of the camp.
No, I think he's wonderful, but he didn't pick up a bunch of awards nominations for Gran Torino because it made it look like he wasn't trying. I mean, that's the thing. It's so effortless. People just go, oh, yeah, he's just made another brilliant movie. And moving on, you go, no, that's a brilliant movie.
Yeah. Dear Duke Special and Morrissey. Duke's special Northern Irish.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Let's check it in case. Okay. I'd just like to express that I think the wonderful Gran Torino should be included in two lists that have been mentioned in the show in the past. Firstly, films that men cry in, and all-time greatest self-sacrifices.
Okay.
I was wondering if
not
the good
to give
doctor...
Away the ending.
Did you shed a tear? And that's from Adam in Portadown.
Actually, there was a tear of luck, because some of it is really funny. I mean, it has some really, really funny stuff in it. And I was laughing. It was so hard at one point. You know that thing when you laugh so hard, you do actually get a little tear coming out the side of your head? That did happen.
Yeah. This is what they do in the telly. You can break at six and do top five.
Exactly, yeah.
That's all right.
That's fine.
All right. I'm not going to get booted off the show running for doing that.
No. I mean, you know, when Mayo and I do it, it's totally shambolic. And you're doing incredibly well at the moment, keeping us even within the thought of, you know, only 3 minutes away from when the news should have started. So
now, we took Fight and Talk out on the road. So we went to Goodison and we went to Harrogate. It's a fantastic thing to do. And I wondered when Kermode and Mayo would catch up. What a week you had last week in Leeds. Can I do the shout outs first here?
Yes.
Mark, John O'Hara, thank you very much for getting in touch. You made the effort to travel there. Could have sold out 10 times over. That's what they're saying in the street, even though it was free. Stephen in Edinburgh as well. Thanks, Stephen, for that. Tom Garwell, thank you. Graham March has emailed in after seeing the Friday Films Live. Amy Whitehead was there. Jane as well. Thank you to all of you for coming down and saying that. I heard you had a great day.
Can I do this very quickly? I was getting the plane at Leeds back to Southampton, and I got stuck behind a bunch of people dressed in fancy dress, right? They were very, very nice, and I said I'd say hello to them. They were going on a stag, and it's Michael Thompson, who's the groom, Rebecca Foster, who's the bride, and the best man was Stephen Spencer, and they were all dressed up as various things. And I said, what's the theme? He said, well, we're all dressed as something German, because we're going to Germany. I said, why is that guy dressed as Batman? He said, well, because he says that nobody knows Batman's identity, therefore he could be German. I go, no, they do. It's Bruce Wayne. He's not. Everyone knows he's American. Except nobody knows who his parents are. Yeah, they do. In the first Batman, you know exactly. Anyway, they were all forced to disrobe. One of them was dressed as the Pope, because otherwise they weren't allowed through security. So there was this sight of this wedding. Anyway, hello to all of you and thank you very much.
You should have filmed it. By the way, talking of that, you can go on the website bbc.co.uk/5live. Go on there and have a look. We're streaming live at the moment. Such action in here, doing it naked especially. Usually gets quite a lot of people watching. Just go online and do that now. You two get stranger every time I fill in here. Who else have you got to say hello to? Can I add people?
You can, yeah, go ahead.
Rusty Lee.
Oh, Rusty Lee, fine. Yeah. Who's Rusty Lee?
This woman used to laugh a lot on the telly.
Okay, fine.
I worry about her.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Well, hello to Rusty Lee and hello to Jason Isaacs and all the others, Fairport Convention. Because otherwise we're going to run out of time. Let's try and do one word reviews of the top five now so that we can move on to Knowing, because I know you've seen Knowing.
Watchmen. Lesbian Vampire Killers. Top three, Duplicity. Paul Blart's Mall Cop.
And I made a terrible mistake. Last week I said it was rubbish. Then I went home and my little boy wanted to go see something on Saturday. And I thought, oh, maybe I was just being mean. You know, it's. And anyway, he went to see it and it was rubbish. And he came back and he went, Dad! I went, so I'm really sorry. I should have listened to myself.
Double there.
Yes, awful.
Number one, Marley and Me, or if it's grammatically pronounced right, Marley and Me.
You know what? If you want to see him, you get a dog, right? You don't need to see Marley. Just get a real dog, okay?
I know. The dog wasn't even that cute.
Now, Knowing.
Yeah, let's talk Knowing. Okay, this is a first preview.
New Nick Cage movie, sci-fi epic. Nick Cage, what was that? Was that a whistle or was that the sound of a tumbleweeds blowing through an empty street?
It's just a whistle of please nail this film. But, you know, obviously, let's see what
listen, I have to read you this from the press notes. This is lovely, right? This is talking about Nick Cage, right? It says, Nick Cage, one of the most versatile actors of all time. Right? One of the most versatile actors of all time, old equine horse face Nick Cage. Now, look, Nick Cage is a lot of things, but one of the most versatile actors of all time. It mentions some of his recent roles. It says things like he's the remake of The Wicker Man, the remake of Bangkok Dangerous, The Weatherman, the Gore Verbinski movie, the Lee Tamahori's Little Scene sci-fi thriller Next, and one of the voices in The Ant Bully. Yes, folks, that's one of the most versatile actors of all time. In this movie, Nick Cage plays a horse-faced character who has some scientific background. His son is at a school where they open up a time capsule that was hidden 50 years ago. His son gets given a bunch of numbers that were written and put down in the time capsule. He's looking at the numbers and he starts to see within the apparent randomness a pattern, because he sees the letters 9/11 and then he figures out that in fact the numbers are predicting 50 years of disasters.
Yeah.
He then attempts to track down the little girl who wrote the numbers down, can't find her but finds her daughter, and confronts the daughter with the numbers, which are about to run out.
Did she have some kind of ability?
Ability?
A gift.
of some kind.
Who are you?
Yeah, it's awkward. You don't know me. I'm John Kessler. I teach astrophysics at MIT. My son goes to William Dawes Elementary, which is the same school your mother went to. And 50 years ago, she put this in a time capsule. It's a list of dates, events that I think she believed would happen.
Look, I don't know what any of this is about.
And I thought if I could talk to you or your father...
My father's dead.
I think it's possible that there are people like your mother, Lucinda, who can see things before they occur.
Abby, we're leaving! Honey?
I followed one of your mother's predictions, and I watched 81 people burn to death in that plane crash yesterday. When she said it would happen, where she said it would happen, and there was nothing I could do about it. She says 178 people will die tomorrow in New York City, and in 3 days' time, October 19th, 33 more.
Stay away from me. And my daughter.
Wah, wah, joke. Nick Cage walks into a bar, bum, and says, why the long face?
Hey.
So, now, okay. Here's the thing with this movie. For a start, obviously we can't give away the ending, because a lot of people, funnily enough, have said in their reviews that it's a hokey sci-fi movie that's kind of redeemed by its ending. I would think that if you've seen the posters for Witch Mountain, if you've seen Close Encounters, if you watched an episode of The Twilight Zone instead, which, of course, Cage himself says that he thinks that it's most closely aligned with The Twilight Zone. I actually think that's quite a good comparison. Mm. It is. It's not that big of a surprise. I mean, I suppose the surprise people saying that it's amazing to see a Hollywood movie, it's budgeted around $50 million, apparently, which is not very much money, having the strength of its convictions and actually following its story through to its logical conclusion. And that, if, for that, it, you know, it is to be admired. It is clearly a film directed by M. Night Shyamalan, despite the fact that it isn't. It's the kind of film... Well, you remember when M. Night Shyamalan made Signs, you know, which was kind of the last good thing he did before going completely mad and making The Lady in the Water, which was the equivalent of somebody setting fire to their career actually in the cinema. And then recently he made the, you know, The Happening, or The Not Happening. Have you seen The Happening?
No, not yet.
Right, okay. Well, The Happening is... It's yet another one of those, yes, come on, M, yes, come on, M, yes, come on, oh, no, you're going to do that thing again. It's, but if you've seen The Birds, you've seen The Happening. But so the story is that Nick Cage thinks that he has this, you know, prophecy that's prophesying something terrible events happening, and a couple of the terrible events we see played out. My reservations first, we see a couple of things like an air crash. I thought the special effects were rather badly done. Mm. I thought the air crash was
rather... Two words, burning moose.
You know, well... The thing is, it's easy to laugh at a burning moose. I mean, obviously not in the real world, but in the CGI world, it's easy to laugh at a burning moose. Although that did remind me, to some extent, of the beginning of Tim Burton's Mars Attacks, in which we see the rampaging herd of burning cattle. But the burning moose, it is a bit kind of... You're supposed to think, ooh, but actually you think, nah, not really. And the plane, which appears, you know, everyone stands and watches while this CGI plane smashes into the ground. And then Nick manages to run into the middle of the area where the plane has just... No, not buying that. I mean, I don't mind the stuff about the numbers and the numerology. But while that clip was playing out, you were saying there was a big plot point, which was that if you know numbers, right? Go on.
Okay, so the dates are on this sheet of numbers that this girl writes up 50 years ago in her class, and he tracks down her daughter, right? 50 years later, that his son just happens to get this letter. What a surprise, because Nick Cage is his father. And here's the dates, and in between every date is the same amount of numbers.
Random.
I'm not going to say what it is. It can only be one thing. They should have went back to the classroom and let the kids sort the film out in 5 minutes. They wouldn't have had to bother with
it. It is peculiar that they don't notice that there are the same amount of numbers between them. Although, fair's fair. I think that... Here's what... I don't think it's as bad a movie as you think it is. I think that in terms of being a sort of... I mean, it's from the director of iRobot, or iRobot as it's referred to, Alex Proyas. I think he's a perfectly fine director. And I think that as a movie which sets up a Twilight Zone-like premise and then does at least follow that premise through properly... Fine, it doesn't bottle out at the end. I mean, there's not a... I mean, you could say the same thing about The Day the Earth Stood Still. It doesn't make it a good film. There are huge moments in it in which Nick Cage, the most versatile actor of all time...
TM.
You just think, for heaven's sake, Nick, really try harder than this, because you are... It's the phoned-in Nick Cage, horse face, no, performance, isn't it? Like, come on, get somebody slightly more convincing. The other thing is that I think the special effects not working means that the end is a little bit Pony and Trap. And
I thought jumped the shark, CGI-wise. I
really?
Thought it actually jumped the shark.
Okay.
The scene of the whole world from far away, I thought, you've just been Fonzie on a water ski jumping over a shark. There's a scene when Nick Cage drops to his knees, and just before it, he has to block out a really shining light. And
yes.
It's the worst thing. The acting was so bad. I thought Rose Byrne was okay. I thought Nicolas Cage's acting performance was so wooden at times that any second...
It's equine.
All the ladies around him were going to take their clothes off because it was closest I've seen to a porn movie in a main movie. The acting, I thought, was atrocious. And I actually have this down, and I'm not just saying this to sensationalise it, as the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And because
you're
of that,
you've
got to go and see it.
No, yeah, you're
because
wrong.
Because it's so funny.
It's not the worst movie ever made, and I think you're overstating this. I mean, honestly, come round to my house, I'll show you Rug Suckers from Mars. That is the worst film ever made. And I was fairly sympathetic towards it in as much as it is a big, stupid movie, but if you put it up next to the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, it's a better film than that. It's suffers from the fact that, you know, Nick Horseface Cage really isn't doing anything other than just wandering around being Nick Horseface Cage. If I was M. Night Shyamalan, I would be currently ringing up my lawyers saying, they've stolen my act and when can I have it back? But I thought, you know what? As stupid Friday night, you can see it coming a mile away. I kind of knew where it was going. I knew the knowing. It was okay. It was fine. It's not that terrible, Colin. It's really not that terrible. You know, here's your problem.
Excellent.
You haven't seen enough really terrible films. Mm. What you need to do is you need to spend a weekend at home with my video collection, and then you need to see the
can
number.
You move for it?
No, I can get
the front door
open. I will
open.
Give you a weekend of the worst. Because I get this all the time. People say, I saw that Jurassic Park. That's the worst film I've ever seen. Go, No, it isn't. Come to my house and I'll show you the worst films you've ever seen.
That's why I'm loath to use the phrase worst film I've ever seen. And I've thought about this and I've went through cupboards.
But you didn't
and
see the remake of Day the Earth Still, did
no.
you? No. No, because if you had, you wouldn't say that about knowing.
But on
it's
the,
a much better
on the same
film
token,
than that.
I'd recommend people see it because there's nothing worse than an average film. It was so bad.
Oh, well, you see, I'd say it's an average film. See, that's the thing. You're saying it's terrible, therefore people go, I think it's an average film. I think Alex Proyas is a perfectly fine director, and I think it could have been a lot worse. But I really want Nick Cage to do something other than because that's it. It's like, you know, and I do expect Cornelius Lysett to be introducing Nick Cage's performance.
Now, let me just go through all these emails about Knowing and find ones that agree with me. Vanessa says, seen Knowing, loved it. But
I think
The Good Doctor's going to hate it. Well,
yeah, I don't hate it at all. I don't hate it. I thought it was fine.
James and Marlebone says, went to see this on Wednesday. Went to see Knowing on Wednesday night, and I thought it was very much a movie of two halves. Yeah, I didn't hate the first 20 minutes. The first half
That's not a half. That would make the movie 40 minutes long. It's not 40 minutes long.
It should have been. The first two acts were very good, setting it up for the final act, which was appalling.
It falls apart, but at least it falls apart in a way which is consistent. I mean, if you've seen What Dreams May Come, which is a film in which Robin Williams goes to heaven, right, you'll begin to understand the point. And let me just ask you
it's
this.
It's not in an egg, is
no,
it? Like
no, it's
Morgan
not in
Mindy.
An egg. But there's another thing. For those who've seen the film, I'm not going to give it. But what is it with wheat? Why has wheat become the universal indicator of otherness? What is it with wheat? And don't give away the ending.
Okay. I just think sunflowers would just be a better way. Sunflowers.
Yes, there are sunflowers in What Dreams May Come. Anyway.
Okay. Let's move on. Mark, two lovers, and then we'll do The Damned United to finish.
Latest collaboration between Joaquin Phoenix and James Gray, the director, who's actually not a million miles away from James Toback. James Toback made a film a while back called Two Girls and a Guy. Remember seeing that with Robert Downey Jr., which I just thought was kind of, you know, nonsensical male fantasy. Oh, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s got to choose between is Heather Graham and Natasha Gregson Wagner, however you pronounce it.
Easy choice.
And in this, essentially, Joaquin Phoenix has made a few films with James Gray. He's very, very, very he's a somber, serious director, very manly director, you know, films about men doing men stuff and all in a very sort of sober. You know, recently Joaquin Phoenix has been on television saying that he's not acting anymore. He's now going to become a rapper. But who knows whether it's real? He went on the Letterman show with a beard and said that he was going to be a rapper and nobody could quite tell whether. No, seriously.
Yeah, I've watched clips of this.
But haven't you? But you watch it and you think, Is it real or is it an act? Is it whatever? Anyway, but this is him at his mumblesome best. And essentially the story is that we see at the beginning of the film, he attempts to kill himself, but he fails. Mm. And of course, as you know, any suicidal misfit who's living with his mum is concerned, he immediately finds himself with two women falling around him. One of them played by Vanessa Shaw, who is this beautiful, intelligent Jewish girl who, for some reason, which I don't fully understand, is deeply attracted to Joaquin Phoenix, who's a total mess up, lives with his mum and dad, keeps attempting to kill himself, life going nowhere, blah, blah, blah. Other one is Gwyneth Paltrow, right? Gwyneth Paltrow lives upstairs, and Gwyneth Paltrow is this incredibly annoying artistic type who, you know, who's all over the place and his life is completely falling apart.
Is this real life or in the film?
This is in the film.
Okay.
Yeah, this is in the film. But that is her voice in and that's good. Like that, yeah. Performance all the way through, right? Fine. So two problems with the film. Well, several problems with the film. One of them is Joaquin Phoenix's performance is... It's like whacking, speak up, open your mouth. It's from that old, you know, the Robert De Niro method school of meanwhile, this is like getting like Iron Man. Gwyneth, and I go, okay, fine. So here's the thing. Vanessa Shaw turns up, right? Incredibly intelligent, attractive, smart woman, wants to marry you. But I'm meant to believe that you're actually more interested in... And I go, no, not...
Not going to happen.
I don't believe any of these relationships. I don't believe the angsty male response to any of these relationships. I don't believe the denouement. And I'm kind of quite annoyed by the... going on all the way through, because it's just like, go with the other woman, who's clearly you don't deserve. You absolutely don't deserve her, and stop complaining and whinging and moaning. And it's something, I was interviewed by Mark Lawson recently, and Mark Lawson said that one of the things that I had said coming out of screenings was they all just need to be slapped. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those films I thought all of you other than her need to be slapped.
If they'd have done the work earlier on and given more credibility to these two lovers, in particular the one that you thought, you're just too good for this guy, would the last half of the film have been better if you hadn't already been turned off by it?
No, because in the end it's a film that's fascinated by the idea of people being self-destructive.
Okay.
And I'm just not that interested.
Okay, The Damned United. And this is interesting, obviously, because you're going from the story of the man rather than the football.
Yes, I had known nothing about the football whatsoever. Of course, this is the story famously of Clough's 44 Days at Leeds, of course, mm-hmm. which I knew nothing about until it's based on David Peace's novel. Have we got time for a clip? Very quickly, here's a clip in which Clough meets his nemesis, Don Revie.
Listening to you, I'm struck that this is not just a business matter for you both. It's more than that. It's personal. Am I right?
Well, we're very different people, Don and I. We have different styles in football and in life. I'm a warm man, an idealist. I do believe in fairies, and that's my outlook. Don is slightly different. There's a hardness to him. He's a cold person.
No, you don't know
and
me.
And that lack of warmth, that coldness, was there. It permeated the club when I arrived.
I totally refute that. You ask any of my players. I was like a father to them in that club every morning, massaging those boys. Did you do that for them?
They would never have let me.
Did you try? You didn't even try. I soaked those boys down with my own hands. You just went to Leeds with no thought for the club, no thought for the players, just on some mad personal vendetta against me.
Well, are you surprised? What else was I going to do after what you did?
Okay.
I really, really liked it. Apparently, the David Peace novel is very, very harsh on Clough. The film isn't at all. He comes across as very sympathetic, as incredibly charismatic, a little bit, you know, off the wall, a little bit mad, but really, really likable. It's, of course, not a film about football. It is centrally a film about friendship and rivalry. The rivalry there, as those two managers, the friendship between him and Taylor, who they fall apart during this famous move to Leeds. It has very little actual football in it, which I was very pleased. It also, I believe also, if you're a football fan, it's a good thing, because football on screen does genuinely look like it's been faked. It doesn't look like the real stuff. Obviously, Michael Sheen, again, brilliant. I mean, I think even better than he was in Frost Nixon.
Do you know he takes the role before he tries to perfect anything about that character whatsoever, and it's only after he's accepted the role that he tries to become that character?
Although apparently he really could genuinely play football beforehand, and that has obviously, you know, lent something to it. My only problem is there's one point in which there is a late night phone call between Clough and Revie, which was eerily reminiscent of the late night phone call between Frost and Nixon, and was clearly made up by Peter Morgan. But other than that, I really liked it, and I say that as somebody who does not get football.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online
bbc.co.uk/5live.